listeners. Welcome to Grief Out Loud. Remember the last time you tried to talk about grief and suddenly everybody left the room? Grief Out Loud is opening up this often avoided conversation because grief is hard enough without having to go through it alone. We bring you a mix of personal stories, tips for supporting children, teens, and yourself, and interviews with professionals in the grief world. Platitude and cliche-free, we promise. Grief Out Loud is hosted by me, Jana DeCristofaro, and produced by Dougie Center, the National Grief Center for Children and Families in Portland, Oregon. So it's close to the end of Women's History Month, and that seems like the perfect time for this episode to be out in the world. Back in 2015, Diane Kalu was living in Nigeria with her husband and their three young children. One day in June, about 8 weeks after the birth of their third child, Diane's husband went to work and never returned. A few days later, she got the news that he had died. She was suddenly a widow, responsible for raising three children, all under the age of five, on her own. To add to that difficulty, Nigeria is a country where there are still several widowhood customs and traditions in existence that are harmful to women. Thankfully, Diane had her mother to help her survive. Then, about 5 years after her husband died, her mother died too. Diane was faced with the heartbreaking task of telling her children, yet again, that someone they loved had died. Throughout both of these losses, Diane discovered a lot about herself and how her innately positive outlook made it hard to follow some of the community expectations she faced around how she should dress and act as a widow and as a grieving daughter. She also found a passion for helping others, specifically other young widows. She founded the We Care Lakota Foundation, an organization that helps young widows in Nigeria through emotional, financial, educational, and social support programs. Diane is kind and warm and funny and a strong, independent woman who is making a difference in the lives of so many others facing the challenges of young widowhood. Diane, thank you so much for coming on Grief Out Loud to talk to me and making the time difference between the U.S. and Nigeria work for our time together.
It's such a pleasure to be here. I'm glad to be sharing this this evening here. I'm glad to be sharing with you.
And I know we plan to talk about your husband who died, and I do want to ask about him. But also want to open it up if there's other losses that you want listeners to know about.
I'd like to talk about my mom because she was my favorite person in the world. And she was actually the one who nursed me back to life when my husband passed away. So my kids were very little. They were 4 years, 22 months, and 8 weeks when their dad passed away. And so my mom had come to care for me before my daughter was born. My daughter is my last child. And so she lived with me for 3 years, for a couple of months before, you know, she went back to her own house. She helped, she was my strongest support system. She helped me through my first few years widowed, you know, she ensured I was okay. She helped with the kids and all of that. So her death was one of the most devastating experiences of my life because it was very brief and sudden. You know, she was ill for 10 days. You know, the last I heard from her, I called her on the phone and asked her because we weren't in the same state, in the same city. So we had to talk over the phone, and I was also making plans to go see her. And she just kept saying, "Don't worry, I'm fine. I'm not going anywhere. I'm still here. I still have a lot of time to spend with you and the kids." And that evening, my auntie, who was caring for her in the hospital, calls me on the phone, and I was yapping away, telling her, "I'm sure she's going to be fine." She assured me she's going to be fine. She's going to be okay. And then she just says she's gone. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? She says she's gone. Your mom is gone. Her voice kept ringing in my head, like, how? This is just barely 5 years after my husband passed away. I was just getting a breather from this whole experience, and this happened. It was the most painful experience beyond anything I have ever, because I wasn't expecting it. Although my husband's death, I wasn't expecting it either, but because her death reopened an old wound in a different way. It was a different kind of, I don't know. I keep saying that the death of a parent is different from the death of a spouse, especially a loved parent, because she poured herself into myself and myself and my siblings. So her death shook us. That was 3 years ago. Yeah, 3 years ago. And up till now, we haven't been able to, get a hang on things. Everybody's still, trying to make sense of how did it just happen? How can you just leave this big vacuum and leave all of us without, no explanations, nothing? And of course, my dad lost it. He lost it and went into depression and just, so it's been a whole lot handling her death. I think also because I had experienced Leslie's death earlier, my husband's death, it kind of guided how I grieved her, her death, how I grieved it, how I mourned for her. So, for example, over here in Nigeria, when someone dies, everybody has something to say to you. I don't know if it happens in America, but here, everybody has something to say to you. And I know it's from a good place. They're trying to make you feel, good about yourself or trying to comfort you in some way, but sometimes it doesn't help. The words don't mean anything. They don't make sense, especially if I know you have never worn my shoes, so your words are empty. And sometimes, it's just annoying, at that point. But here, because respect is a big deal here. So when they call you on the phone, you have to listen through, yes, they're saying things like, you're the oldest, you have to get it together, should expect you to get it. I mean, she's barely 24 hours dead, and you're asking me to hold it together. How in the world am I supposed to do that, right? Hold it together. You're the oldest. You need to bring your siblings together. You need to make it work. I'm like, I haven't even gotten myself together. I haven't even gotten to tell my kids because they were very fond of her. I haven't even gotten a hang on what's going on. And then all these people are calling.
Giving you jobs to do.
They have to call your siblings. You have to gather them. You have to do this. You have to. So, one of the things I did was I stopped taking the calls. So every time you call me, I send you a text message. I can't come to the phone right now. Drop a text message. They got offended. A lot of them got offended by that, but it helps me. It helps me keep my sanity, So that's something I miss her so much. I wish I could give 1 hour just to just to spend it with her. So yeah, that's about my mom's death. I mean, I was able to keep it together until I had to tell my kids. The moment I broke the news to them, that was what broke me. Their expression, the anguish in their voices, the pain. And I remember one of them saying, "Not again." That singular word just shattered me. I cried a lot, but I'm better. I'm fine.
Quick to say, I'm fine.
We're moving forward. Not fine, but moving forward.
Diana, I'm thinking about your mom is the one that comes, supports you, surrounds you when your husband dies, and then your mom dies, and like she's the person who's there for you in your grief, and now you're grieving for her. And I'm wondering if there's anything that you better understand about her experience of supporting you in your grief now that you're supporting your kids in grieving for her.
I would say now understanding the pain that she felt, watching me grieve, and not knowing how to help me. I think that helplessness of watching your child grieve or your child go through a pain that you can't help them carry. They have to learn how to carry this pain. While I was grieving my husband, I would see her watch me. I would see her, just helpless. All she just wanted to do was find a way to support me. But there was no way. The only thing she could do was just be there for me, take care of the children. But there wasn't anything she could really do to help me. I had to find a way to help myself through the process. But I had to find a way to believe that I could walk through this path myself. And she was just there to say, okay, if you're willing to walk this path, then I'm going with you. Because the early days after he died, I had widow brain. I forgot everything. Like my brain literally shut down. I didn't even notice that was going on with me. But my mom cut it. She cut the fact that we'd have a conversation 2 minutes ago, and then the next thing she's trying to point me to that conversation, and I can't remember. My brain was blank. I had a brain fog, a severe one. And so what she tried to do for me, just to support me, is that she would write sticky notes. So for every conversation, because we literally used to get into arguments. She'll say, but we just discussed this. I'm like, I can't remember having this conversation with you. And so she helped me by, she started to do sticky notes. She'll stick them on the fridge, stick them everywhere on the mirror, just so that I can remember. So the moment she started to do that, I began to realize that this was actually a problem and something I needed to work on. I mean, I had three children to raise. So I needed to find myself so that I could also help my children. So I started to do what I call brain exercises, cramming. Started to try to cram things just to see if it would help. And it actually helped me come out of that brain fog.
What kinds of things were you trying to cram in?
So I sing. So I started to learn songs, to cram songs. Just pick songs, score as much as possible, and then try to sing it back. So that helped my brain to, I don't know, maybe jumpstart, reboot, whatever you'd call it. So doing that consciously, doing that regularly really helped me. It helped me come out of it.
So that it's almost like exercises for your brain, and
Yes,
music was
exercises.
really the way that worked well.
Yes, exercises for my brain. So just watching her not being able to help me and seeing my children grieve and not being able to help them grieve her loss just made me realize the magnitude of helplessness she felt when I was actually in that position.
It's making me think about this idea that when we're grieving, it's almost like we have to build a house, and we're the only one that can build that house, but the people around us can help us by bringing us tools and materials and maybe handing over some blueprints and a snack and some water. And it sounds like your mom was really skilled at bringing you the supplies you needed so that you could build that house.
Yes, I always say that love is stronger than death. And I mean, her love and the love of the people who were around me at that time. You know, I had like church members come around, you know, try to help. I think that shaped my healing process. It shaped the way I looked at life post loss. I always say that usually the first encounter someone has after loss determines sometimes how they process the grief. So because I received a lot of love, a lot of support, it made me a much more tender person, a much more compassionate person, someone who could receive love. I learned to receive a lot of love and also learned how to give it, you know, to give it out.
Could we talk for a moment about what are some of the unique obstacles and challenges that exist for widows in your country, in Nigeria?
Oh, there are lots. There are so much. I always say that sometimes we're being oppressed by our dead ancestors. And that's because we have all these customs and traditions that are perceived to be what our forefathers practiced. And these customs and traditions were not favorable to women. So there are a lot of harmful widowhood practices, like drinking corpse water. Like they'll wash the corpse and ask some women to drink it in some part. Or, you know, rituals like sitting up 12 nights just to breathe, you know, the husband. I mean, there are so many harmful widowhood practices in different areas, but I didn't experience any of that. But in my community and with the women I've worked with over the years, you'd see them shaving of hair, isolation, wearing specific color of garments after loss. That I experienced. You know, some people felt I should have been wearing black all through. In certain cultures, there are people who believe that after the loss, you're to stay indoors for 40 days and not come out. So, and I keep asking them, if I sit indoors for 40 days, is it going to bring him back? If I wear a certain color of garment, is it going to bring him back? He's not going to bring him back. He's not going to come back. So why don't you allow this widow or this person to go through their grief, to kind of find their way through this journey? It's already hard enough. Why are you making it much more difficult, you know, for them to go through? So there are a lot. Shaving your hair without your permission, that's another one and there are several of them. They should be abolished.
Are there any similar rituals or practices for men, or is it specifically for women who have had husbands die?
Well, for men, it's a bit lenient. Men have it much more simpler, much more milder than women. That's why I said usually these harmful widowhood practices aren't favorable to women. They're usually things that would harm the woman. And to think about the fact that she's the one with the children, you know, she's the one to care for this young ones when their father is no more. Why do you need to pass her through, you know, all these kinds of practices? Sometimes they treat some of these women as inheritable properties. You know, a relative has to marry you so that you know, you're in the family and they can take care of you and things like that. But for the men, it's not, they have it easy. They have it much more easier than women.
Some of the ones you're describing seem, in a way, there's like the personal harm, but then also like an isolation piece of like cutting people off from community. And I wondered for you, in not doing them, did you also experience repercussions for not doing some of those rituals that cut you off from community?
So these customs and traditions apply in various in various societies within Nigeria. Right here in Nigeria, we have 36 states. These 36 states fall under different geopolitical zones. You know, you have the South-South, the Southwest, the North-Central, the Southeast, and all of that. So in each small community, they have their set of customs and traditions, right? So for my side of the country or side of the society, they didn't force me to do these things. But I experienced some kind of stigmatization because I didn't do it. Now, it wasn't from relatives or in-laws. It was from neighbors. It was from regular people that I knew. So because I wouldn't wear black, I wouldn't wear white. Usually those are the two colors they prefer for widows to wear. So because I wouldn't wear these two colors, they refused to talk to me. They don't want to associate with me. You know, they isolated me because I wouldn't wear these colors. So that's one. You know, they believe that when your husband passes away, you shouldn't dress maybe glamorously after loss, or you shouldn't express yourself. You shouldn't laugh too much. You shouldn't wear a bright smile. You should always be gloomy. You should always be beat down, you know, dramatic and all of that. So because I'm not that way. I have a very positive outlook to life. I understood what I was going through. But most of my sobbing, my crying, my grief, I did that inside the house. When I was leaving the house, you'd barely even know something happened to me, you know? And so that kind of confused them. Like, you know, some of them were confused. You know, some even came to, you know, approach me to say, why are you not wearing a long face? You're supposed to be wearing a long face so that people are surrounding you and, you know, trying to console you. You know, and it just didn't make sense to me. Why do I need the pity? That's pity. That's not compassion. If you need me to look a certain way for you to, you know, console me or comfort me or whatever, that's for you. It's not for me. You're doing it to, you know, for your own gratification, definitely not for mine. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the fact that your husband died should be enough to offer you that compassion and that support, not based on what your facial expression looks like or what clothes you're wearing.
Exactly. Because I'm here struggling. Like, how do I care for three children? I was literally hysterical when he passed. I was in another world. My world just took a 180 degrees turn. How do I make it from there? How do I care for three kids all by myself? Like, who does that? I mean, I was upset at some point. Why, Leslie, why would you bring me out to the road and just go? This was not the plan. This wasn't when we agreed to get married. This was not what we planned for. So I was in a state of confusion myself. It took a while for me to settle into my role as a mom, dad. But here we are, 9 years later.
What have you discovered about yourself, Diane, in that process of becoming, you said, mom, dad, and having to figure out how am I going to raise three kids on my own? Like, what have you uncovered about yourself?
I uncovered a lot of things because, so the first thing without going deeper was my resilience and my positive outlook to life. It was in that in those moments that I realized, I had this belief that everything works together for good somehow. I don't know why, I don't know how, I don't know when. I mean, there has to be something bigger than what I'm experiencing right now. So that resilience, I just knew that I was going to survive. One thing I've also observed over the years, I think personalities or temperaments could also play a vital role in how someone feels or how someone perceives life. I have a bit of a sanguine nature, can be, very joyful. So that helped my outlook to life. That helped how I processed, what I was going through. It helped me. So that's one. I discovered that I was a very resilient person. I discovered that I was very positive minded. And then I went for therapy. That also helped me, in discovering, childhood traumas that I had to deal with, things that could also they show up in your grief. So yeah, the therapy helped me become more self-aware. And in being more self-aware, I became a better parent, a more effective parent, because I started to see myself through the eyes of my children, being able to relate better with them. And also, I discovered how compassionate I was. I also embraced my creativity. I mean, a whole lot. Sometimes I say that yes, it's been a terrible experience for me, but then it's also been, I would I say, one of the best years of my life, because I've picked up the things that could have destroyed me, all the hurt, all the pain, all the disappointment, because this wasn't the life I was hoping for. All the disappointment, all the pain I have experienced, and I've turned it, I mean, into something beautiful, like being able to help other women like myself in the foundation that I now run, which is an offshoot of my experience. And it simply just happened as a result of me sharing about my pain and how I was young and widowed, and everybody expected me to be old and scraggy and ugly and unwanted. And so I wrote an article about it, that this is what widowed looks like. I'm not old, I'm not ugly, I'm not what you think I should be. As at that time, I didn't know any other young widow. I didn't know any other person that was young and widowed. So it was frustrating to see people wanted me to be a certain way, and I didn't want to conform. I didn't want to conform to the stereotype. I wanted to break out of that. And so by the time I put out that article, a lot of women who had been hiding, their pain, who didn't have a way of expressing themselves. And, they sent me messages and like, wow, you said what has been on my mind. Wow, you're so brave, you're so bold, you're so courageous. I'm like, okay, so this is something that should be looked into. And so that's how the foundation was born.
Before we go even more into the foundation, let's just pause for listeners to catch up and tell us a little bit, like, what's the name of the foundation and what's the work that you do with them?
Okay, so the name of the foundation is We Care, WICARE, Lakota Foundation. So we cater to women, we empower women, but we primarily focus on young widows and their children as a result of my own experience. So in the foundation, we provide supports beyond the grieving process. We provide empowerment for their businesses, because usually most of these women are they're stay-at-home moms, so their husbands are mostly the breadwinners, and sometimes when the man passes away, the in-laws, the relatives come to take everything from them, so they are left with nothing. And so they have to start all over again with young children. We try to raise funds for, you know, them, for those of them who want to go into small scale businesses. We help to raise funds for them, and we help to provide them monthly support, you know, just something to support them in the meantime while they transition, like a transition support fund, you know, just to help to stabilize them as they reintegrate. We help with the education because here in Nigeria, we don't have any support for widows. Single moms, you're on your own. You have to fend for yourself and survival of the fittest and all of that. So we help to provide that. We also provide counseling. We have some organizations that we partner with that can help to, you know, talk to them if they need, you know, some kind of, you know, emotional support. And then we also provide advocacy. We have some lawyers that work with us and to help provide advocacy. And then also for the moms, the young widows, some of them aren't educated. If you want to, you know, further your education, improve your, you know, have a career of some sort. I mean, we do a whole lot of stuff. We have mentoring for the boys. So all of this stems from my experience, right? So when I started, when my boys started to grow, I found out that I was struggling with getting a grip on what needs to be done. And so I introduced mentorship for them. And I just thought about it. Hey, wait a minute. What if, you know, other women can benefit from this mentoring program? So we have that mentoring. We also have parenting programs that can help the mothers to be intentional and effective parents, and a whole lot more. A whole lot more that we do. And also, one more thing, the fact that I'm able to impact people is really helped me heal, you know, giving back. And that's something I always encourage everybody to do. Find one person and help. It may just be conversation. It may just be a hug. It may just be sitting with them. It may just be your smile. You know, when you're helping someone, you don't realize that you're also helping yourself. Kind of like a symbiotic experience. Yes.
You know, before we wrap up, I have one last question for you.
Okay.
What do you think your husband would think about the work that you're doing now?
He would be so amazed. I'm sure he probably wouldn't even recognize who I've become. Yeah, you know, I think about it all the time. Like if you were to meet me now, I'm so different from the person he met 14 years ago. I'm a very different person. I'm not the same girl. I'm not the same woman who gave birth. You know, I've transitioned, I've evolved to this person I am now. So he's gonna take a step back and just observe me and be sure he's seeing right, first of all. And of course, be definitely proud of me. Somehow, sometimes I say I don't even know how I got here. You know, sometimes when I look at the pictures of my children growing up and where they are now, I have a teenager and two preteens. I don't even know how I got here. It's been a long, hard road, but I'm also proud of myself. I've learned to positively affirm myself, you know, always affirm myself because my ears are the first that hear me when I speak. And I believe that Everything I say, it gets into me first before it gets out there. So I need to speak to myself the right way so that I would attract the right things for myself. Yeah, so I'm proud of myself. I'm proud of how far I've held it together. There's been terrible days. There have been days of tears, days of fear, days of confusion. It hasn't been all rosy. You know, there's been days of disappointment, days of rejection, days of abandonment, days of just pure grief and anguish, and just wishing that, you know, there was a man there. There was some masculine figure in the picture to just shoulder all of this. Because I keep saying I'm not cut out for this. I'm not meant to carry this load. It's not meant for me. It's the man. The man is meant to shoulder all of this. It's been a tough journey, but you know, I'm happy I'm on this side and I can tell the story. And I really hope that it encourages someone out there who is just starting this journey and is confused where to go, how to proceed from here. It's just one day at a time. I think that's just what I had on my mind. One day at a time. So when in the beginning, when I would go through the day, I'm like, ah, finally another day. Okay, tick. So next day. So I wasn't really thinking about 1 year, I wasn't thinking so far ahead. I was just thinking in the minutes and in the seconds and in the day. I wasn't thinking about what's going to happen in 10 years. I don't know what's going to happen in 20 years, right? I was just thinking about what will happen the next minute, the next second, just taking it one day at a time. Yeah.
You didn't have a 5-year plan, you had a 5-minute plan.
I didn't have a 5-year plan. I had a 5-minute plan, and I was very flexible. I wrote all my plans in pencil.
Well, Diane, when I asked you what you uncovered about yourself through this grief experience, it's amazing how many things and how that skill set and that passion and that commitment has really translated into creating this real wraparound program for young widows in Nigeria. And I'm curious if people want to be a part of the work that you're doing, how can they best connect with you?
Okay, so you can connect with us on Facebook at We Care Network, also on Instagram at We Care Network.
Well, Diane, thank you so much for reaching out to me, for making this connection, for sharing your story with me and our listeners, and for the work you're doing with all of the young widows in your community through your organization, We Care. I'm just really amazed and grateful for your time and for your work.
And thank you for having me. It's been awesome sharing my story with you.
Listeners out there, you know I say it each and every single time, but thank you for being part of our community. If you ever want to reach out to me directly, you can email me at griefoutloud@dougie.org. That's dougy.org. That's also our main website where you can find all of the information about Dougie Center's local programming, some free downloadable resources like tip sheets and activity sheets, and of course, each and every episode of Grief Out Loud. Excited as always to share that the podcast is sponsored in part by the Chester Stephan Endowment Fund. Thanks again for listening. We hope you'll join us again next time.